Chapter 12. Aspen. Aspen groaned inwardly as he looked around at the ring of tired but interested faces. The caravan had been set to rights as best it could be, and the surviving members healed. Fortunately, Aspen hadn't had to make the difficult choice of whether or not to reveal that he was more than the simple farmer he appeared by healing the wounded, since Restor had been able to care for everyone who hadn't died outright. He was certain that his extremely lackluster performance in the fight at least lent credence to his claim of being a simple man who had asked the three travelers to escort him to the city. Now, though, it was just Aspen, Doom, and Silas who had returned to her rest after being assured she would get the full story later, since Rouge and Mott had had to return to their own world to get some sleep. They were both exhausted, and the rush brought on by Rouge's amazing rewards after the battle had quickly worn off until the child was nearly swaying on her feet. The two traveler zombies now waited a steady 15 feet away, while Codswallop and Burrito foraged nearby. The caravanners were enamored of their rescuers. The young wood elf who had introduced himself as Vaughn kept a close watch on Rouge's zombie, clearly fascinated. Aspen, in turn, kept a surreptitious eye on the boy from under his hat, which was now restored to, if not its former glory, at least its rightful place on his head. With the primary agents of their salvation now more or less absent, the focus was on Aspen. Doom, as usual, was taciturn at best, and kept looking down the road as if she was in a hurry to be away. Aspen could relate. He smiled and raised his hands as yet another person attempted to press a food item upon him. "No, thank you, ma'am. I'm full enough as 'tis." He glanced at Doom, who stood with arms crossed and lips pressed tightly together. "We need to continue on to our destination, truly." Restor, who had been bandaging the last and most minor of the injuries sustained by the caravanners, looked over at that. "Where are you going, then? You're on the road to Bloodhaven, so may I take it that that is your goal?" Aspen glanced at Doom, who glared at him, flicking her eyes at the road in a clear message that he should shake them off so they could go. He sighed. "Aye, Bloodhaven is our goal, and we must." The old man looked back and forth between the traveler and the farmer, and frowned a little. Then he looked over at the six canvas-wrapped bundles laid carefully side by side on the red bricks of the road. "I'd like to offer you and your companions a proposition. We lost six of our own today. Four guards, a cook, and our ostler. Without the guards, this road is a perilous one, and without the ostler, we have no one with enough knowledge to properly care for the animals." Restor looked over Aspen's well-worn clothes and disreputable hat, as well as the scythe that served as his weapon. "Do you perhaps have experience caring for animals? Would you be willing to be our ostler for the remaining 3 days of our journey, while your friends work as guards? I would be willing to give you the same share of the profits that those who have been with us since we began have earned, since these last days are by far the most dangerous on our journey, especially if there are more of those monstrous creatures about. Quest, ostler hustle begun. Restor needs guards and someone to care for his animals. You happen to have some big tough friends, and animals really like you these days. Seems mutually beneficial. Success, improved relationship with all members of the caravan. Significantly improved relationship with Restor. Entry into Bloodhaven. Failure, more deaths on your conscience and much reduced odds of entering Bloodhaven undetected." Restor looked from Doom to Rouge and back to Aspen again. "I do not mean to insult you, but we have heard disquieting rumors that non-humans are rather less welcome in the human cities than they were even a short while ago. The best place for such is likely within a group of well-intentioned men who have good reason to be traveling abroad at this time. It may be that we can offer you some protection at the end of our journey to balance the assistance you give us now." Doom's face had gone blank as the old man spoke, but Aspen knew her well enough by now to see the calculations going on behind her ice-blue eyes. She stepped forward and spoke for the first time since she'd arrived, and refused to explain why she'd been so much later than expected. "Give us a moment, please." She stepped away, gesturing for Aspen to follow her. Once they were out of earshot, Doom gestured back at the caravaner. "What do you think? Can we trust him?" Aspen's eyebrows shot up, and then he ducked his head to hide the expression. "I don't know. I just do what Rouge and Mott tell me. They keep me safe." The girl snorted. "I'm not stupid. I don't know what's going on here exactly, and I don't care. As long as Rouge is safe from those jerk PKERs, you lot can do whatever crazy questline you're following. What I do know is that Rouge and Mott both listen to you when you talk. They care what your opinion is. So what do you want to do? The tall man sighed and tugged at the brim of his hat. I need to get to Bloodhaven. Faster is better, but safest is best. If they can get us there in 3 days, well, it's only a half day longer than we would take traveling the back roads alone, and there is safety in numbers. Plus, I just received a quest that says if we don't go with them, we'll likely be caught when we attempt to enter Bloodhaven. That seems like a pretty clear indication that we need them. He looked over his shoulder at the group of people who were watching them talk with no pretense of disinterest. Then he looked at Rouge's zombie, where it sat silent and staring on Codswallop's back. Plus, Rouge would want us to protect them. Doom just shook her head and muttered, "Whatever you are, it's not a standard NPC." She drew in a breath. Fine. We'll stay with them. It's for the best, I guess, since I'll probably need to go before Rouge and Mott get back, which would leave you alone for a while. This way, at least you have some cannon fodder before the monsters eat you. She turned and started to walk back to the group, tossing one last comment over her shoulder. Plus, I got a nice quest to stay with them when that old guy started talking. Rouge and Mott will probably have it too when they log back on. Aspen ground his teeth and followed. Doom stayed with the caravan for about 6 hours, which was long enough to be attacked by a pack of lesser wolves. A few wolves wasn't terribly concerning, but 20 of them could do some damage, especially if they got through the line of defenders. The half-elf, however, proved well worth her share of the caravan's profits. It was the first time Aspen saw her fight without Rouge and Mott, and it was a revelation. The woman was whirling silver death with her slim blade, and killed at least half of the wolves without assistance. The remaining guards took out 8 more wolves, and the last 2 demoralized canids turned tail and ran. Aspen, of course, stayed with the horses, and made sure they didn't panic and run. He was amazed to find that he could now calm them simply by reaching out with his mind, and reassuring them that they had nothing to fear. He couldn't communicate with the beasts directly, of course, but there was a definite link between him and any living creature nearby. Afterwards, the 14 remaining members of the caravan crowded around the half-elf girl, thanking her, and pressing food and water into her hands. Meanwhile, Aspen, who was brushing the foam off the horses as they calmed, discovered something about himself. He didn't mind not being the hero. Once upon a time, in the tiny hamlet of Jumping Hollow, a 14-year-old boy named Yorgas walked into the little temple that served as a place of worship for all the gods. That boy knelt down and told the gods, all of them, that he wanted to be a hero. He wanted fame, and adulation, and money. Only one god answered him, and he was truly lucky that it wasn't one far worse than a Tai, who might be dark, but treated every being ever born in the exact same way. Because everyone and everything eventually came to her in the exact same way. A Tai was goddess of more than just death and the chaos pool, though few people remembered that. She was mistress of transitions, of the times when one thing became another. As such, she told him she could make him a hero, but he would have to give up everything he had and be reborn as something different. He accepted in a heartbeat, and she broke his life upon her knee. Now watching the grateful caravanners, Aspen only wished that he was home. A home far from the large fenced estate where he had lived with Bertie. Away from the place where everyone knew his name and face, and feared him as much or more than they respected him. He wished that he was watching the fresh green leaves of the crops press up through the sun-warmed earth. That Sumi was haranguing him about his personal hygiene while Sarave chased a mischievous green-skinned toddler and 2 small unicorns through fields of wildflowers. He wished he could work hard all day, then sit and eat dinner with his family, laughing at Silas' antics and Kor's curmudgeonly statements. He wished that the world didn't need heroes. So when Tia came to him shortly after they set out again and thanked him for caring for the horses, he just smiled. An hour later, Doom dropped back from the head of the column, walking her horse at his side. "I have to go," she said abruptly. He nodded. He had assumed as much when he saw her change direction. "Don't you want to know why?" He slanted a look at her, saw the way she was biting her lip and staring at Rouge's zombie. "Nope," he said. "My mother called," she told him, her eyes fixed on Oleander's soft white ears. "I see." He tried to keep any hint of concern or interest out of his voice, and thought he succeeded fairly well. "She wants me to come for dinner tomorrow. I told her I have class tomorrow and the day after. I'm not going to travel that far and then do it again an hour later. Her gloved fingers were tight on the reins, and her horse tossed his head against the pole. He nodded. She told me she needed to talk to me, and if I'd needed to talk to her, she'd have made the trip. Which she wouldn't. Silence. I have 2 papers due by the end of the week. I'm going to finish them tonight, and turn them in early. Then I'll go to dinner tomorrow, and I can skip classes Friday if I have to. Someone will share their notes with me. She loosened her grip and patted Oleander on the neck, then stroked his mane absently. I'll be back tomorrow about this time. If Rouge asks. Though she probably won't because I blew her off earlier. Aspen looked up at the slim figure on the white horse, pulling his hat brim down to shade his eyes. She'll ask, he told her. She smiled just a little and nodded. Then she dropped further back, and a moment later, her zombie had joined the other two. He was alone. Almost alone. Wow, Silas chirped. I think she likes you. He covered his eyes with his hand and shook his head, promptly tripping over a rock in the road. He uncovered his eyes. He really needed to remember to look forward. After having spent months around the travelers, Aspen felt strange being with his own people again. There were no conversations about alternate worlds, no light-hearted teasing about being injured or killed, no deep discussions of history or family life. In fact, the caravanners were, to put it simply, dull. They ate, they traveled, they ate, they traveled, they ate, they circled the wagons and set sentries, and then they slept. The cook talked about cooking. The wagon drivers drove the wagons. The guards talked about whose turn it was to take the middle shift overnight, and how best to care for their armor and weapons. Restor, Tia, and Vaughn were the only exceptions. Tia and Vaughn both checked in with Aspen. Tia wanted to make sure Aspen was fully recovered from his injury, and Vaughn wanted to know when Rouge would return, but at least it was something. Restor was busy keeping everyone in line and on task, but he found time to stop by and check in on Aspen. His main concern was really when the travelers would return, but he was friendly and shared some news of the road. It turned out that the caravan was working a new trade route between Quarternell and the Wood Elves to the west, so they had no definite news of Bright either. By now, Aspen was well aware that time passed differently in the world where Rouge and Mott made their home. He was able to tell his visitors that it would be at least 16 hours before the others came back, and likely longer. None of his visitors cared for that answer, and all left quickly after hearing it. They're kind of cranky, aren't they? Silas inquired as they walked down the seemingly interminable red brick road the morning after Doom left. Aspen grinned wryly and murmured quietly to the little bat, who was snuggled against his jaw, hidden by the collar of his shirt. They have reason to be, do they not? Our friends promised to help guard the caravan, and yet no guarding is occurring. You and I know that Mott and Rouge were too exhausted to continue, and Doom had responsibilities as well. Nonetheless, they are gone, and only I, who could barely scratch their enemies, am here. However much they need a ostler, which need I find myself questioning, for this final leg of the journey, I doubt they would have offered their protection to me alone. Silas sighed. The fluff of her tiny body rubbed his neck, and he smiled. They just don't know you as well as we do. Her voice was reassuring, as if she thought he might be concerned by the caravaner's clear condescension. It's all right, little one. Our goal, after all, is to blend in. If I had single-handedly destroyed our opponents, I would also have destroyed any chance we had at maintaining my anonymity. Silas paused. A non-eye mouse? Anonymity, he chuckled. It means that I'm no one important. Uninteresting and unremarkable. Which is exactly what we want. My former self had rather too many enemies that my current self would be unable to handle. If I had any interest in doing so, which I emphatically do not. The bat blew a raspberry. He hadn't even known she could do that. Then she squeaked. What? I bit my tongue. He tightened his lips against the laughter welling up inside him. I'm sorry. Where did you learn to do that? Rouge and Juniper do it. It looked fun. He allowed a small smile to escape and tugged his hat down to cover it. You should show Rouge when she returns. It was very impressive. The bat perked up. I will. Then her head popped up over his collar, and her big eyes began scanning their surroundings. He sobered. What is it? Something. I think you should get your weapon. He threw a dubious glance at the scythe, where it was strapped to the horse walking beside him. Its success rate so far was unimpressive, but he supposed better than nothing. Probably not better than the staff he'd used to make it, however, especially given how unwieldy it actually was as a weapon. Silas climbed the rest of the way out of his shirt, then winged over to the horse, burrowing under the flap of the saddlebag. "Be ready," she said. He got his scythe. This time it was bandits. They stood just around a bend, dense trees concealing them until it was too late to run. There were four of them visible, and likely more in the trees to the side of the road. They stood in the path, weapons out, sneers on their dirty faces. Their leader, a woman so tall and broad she could likely have stood her ground against the smallest demonic troll, waved a crossbow at the lead wagon. "Geir Gald Weishillens," she shouted, and Aspen blinked. He honestly had no idea what she had just demanded. Restor rode forward, and the crossbow bolt locked onto him, sharp and menacing. "Good day, lady," he said, his thick white hair gleaming in the sun. "I'm afraid this has not been a good journey. We were attempting a new route, and profits are slim. 10 gold is the total of all the funds in our cash box." His genial voice sounded as though he was genuinely sorry not to be able to offer more money to the thieves. "Gone. Tour wagons Wathmorinda. Geir Gald, or I'll shut you naske next." The bow waved threateningly, and Restor's back tensed, though his voice remained calm. "Alas, madam, only I can open the cash box. 'Tis spelled to ward against theft. Come and I'll show it to you, and you shall see that there are only 10 gold inside. Take it, and let us pass, I pray you." Restor motioned to the lead wagon. Aspen had wondered why one of the guards was driving that one, with his armor concealed beneath a smothering wool cloak, and he supposed this was the answer. The guard would attempt to capture or kill the bandit when she went to see this mythical strongbox, and hope the others would give up upon losing their leader. However, the big woman was having none of it. "Bring it air, Weishillens. And Mamenel go true yon wagons, and mak it wathile." Her eyes were narrowed, and Aspen could see that she had made up her mind. Quickly, he tried to figure out what he could do. No doubt he could fight these mere human threats and acquit himself well. He had been practicing with Mott and Rouge for months, and if he could hold his own against them, these bandits wouldn't fare well. Unfortunately, that presented him with two conundrums. First, it would draw far too much attention to him. While the caravanners had dismissed him as a mere peasant before, there was no way they would continue to do so if he slew half a bandit clan. Second, and more important, there were too many innocents remaining in the wagons. If, as he suspected, there were more bandits in the trees, then the wagons would be full of arrows before the 6 visible brigands were down. Even if he could keep the 6 occupied, the noncombatants would die. So he needed to think, as Rouge would say, outside the box. Dismissing the continuing back and forth between Restor and the thief from his mind, he closed his eyes, casting out with his mana. When he had been Yorga's Penbrook, the king's necromancer, he had been able to sense death and the undead without even trying. More than once he had foiled an attempted ambush because he could feel the Lich King's macabre forces lurking nearby. That sixth sense was gone, and honestly, it wasn't one he missed. No sane person who had ever felt the chill of the grave envelop their soul would crave the return of the sensation. Recently, however, he had felt something else. Something so utterly opposite to that frigid turbulence that it had taken him weeks to acknowledge what it was, much less put a name to it. Life. At first, it was only around the crops. When he prayed and cast his magic over them, he felt a hint of warmth, a connection, almost as though the tiny spirits of the plants were a brush of sunlight on his soul. Then he started to sense when one of his friends, or the other beings who had come to live on the farm, were nearby. It was so slight that it had taken William's arrival to make him realize what it was. Because he couldn't feel William. Aspen was certain that his necromancer sense would instantly have known the aged Fruktipir was present, but his new sense couldn't tell the difference between the vamp and a chunk of rock. This difference, the absence of that barely there awareness of the presence of other creatures when William was around, was what had finally convinced him that he wasn't just imagining things. Aspen had, very quietly, been practicing this new sense. So far it seemed entertaining but relatively useless. The range was short, no more than 30 feet or so, and he had to stop whatever else he was doing in order to focus on it enough for it to be more than a nebulous feeling of comfortable warmth that increased when he was near something living and growing. Recently, he had found that he could identify the sources of the life force. Mott, Rouge, Codswallop, Burrito, Silas, and even Doom and Oleander all had their own something that made them unique. Rouge, who enjoyed sneaking up on people and attempting to surprise them entirely too much, though she claimed she was trying to level her stealth and sneak skills, hadn't actually surprised him in over a week. Then there were the horses, and his discovery that he could not only sense them, but actually affect them as well. Given all that he had learned, he thought he might be able to. Yes. A flicker, then a flame, then five more bursts of life force revealed themselves in his mind's eye. Two were on the ground, low and flat, one on each side of the road, halfway down the caravan's column. The other four were in trees, their fires steady and focused. Snipers, waiting for the signal to begin firing on the hapless merchants. Now what to do with that information? He focused on the bushes in which the two bandits on the ground were lying. They glimmered green in his soul sense, though they each had several snapped branches and broken leaves. The grass likewise was bruised and glimmered an unhappy yellow in his sight. Aspen reached out gently and touched the plants. They flickered, then steadied, and he could feel a sort of stolid surprise from the bushes and a more diffuse attention from the grass, as though thousands of organisms had all turned to look at him at once. He breathed slowly in through his nose and out through his mouth, almost shuddering under the creeping feeling. Carefully, he pulled at his mana, feeling it empty from the reservoir in which it rested until he needed it. He had been a mage for over 25 years after all, and though he had lost the magic he once knew, he hadn't lost his mastery of that magic. He fed the mana into the bushes and grass. Forming an image in his mind of his need, he gave them the strength to achieve it. A moment later, the human life forces sank lower into the ground, then flared and went out. The grass had used its long, fibrous roots to pull them into the ground, filling their mouths before they could cry out, and the bushes had speared snapped branches into the ground, driving spikes into the soft eyes and through the brain beyond. Then the flesh that once was men became nothing but fertilizer. The plants were satisfied with the bargain. Aspen swallowed hard and reached out to the trees. When he opened his eyes a moment later, the four bandits standing in the road were alone, though they didn't know it yet. The bandit leader was clearly out of patience. Restor had fetched a small wooden box from the wagon and was pretending to be far more aged and infirm than he actually was. He kept attempting to lure the woman from her place, flanked by her men. Aspen could tell that, dim as she seemed to be, she knew something was wrong. He also saw the moment when she decided she was done playing. Her body tightened, and her arm lifted, setting the crossbow in position to shoot the old man who stood no more than 10 feet in front of her. The guard who had been driving the lead wagon abandoned all pretense of being a simple teamster. He pulled a small round shield from where it was tucked down in the footwell of the wagon and launched himself toward Restor, who was only a few feet away, clutching the wooden box. The bowstring snapped, the bolt launched toward the old man, and then the rest of the guards were in motion, racing toward the threat, weapons bared. The first bandit went down with an arrow in his throat, and the young wood elf, Vaughn, was already knocking another arrow. The second found himself fighting two furious, trained guardsmen, and found that his usual technique of hacking and slashing didn't work as well against foes who were uninjured and not outnumbered. He went down with a gurgling cry and did not rise. The bandit leader threw her crossbow to the side and pulled a 3-foot blade from a scabbard on her belt. She swung wildly, 1, 2, 3, then realized that her foes weren't falling as she expected. She threw a wild look into the trees. "Farn," she screamed, "Bettel. Gandup. Kameen Weishillens. Wake up." When only silence answered her, she growled, and to her credit, stood firm against the two guards attacking her. Then her last remaining man broke and ran, and the two guards who had finished the second brigand turned their attention to her. She roared, and her weapon, deadly simply because of its size and weight, even if she had little real skill in wielding it, crashed against the guards' armor and swords. The battle was all but won then, though it took another few minutes and some minor injuries to the guards, before a man was able to get past her swings and managed to plunge his sword into the gap between her boiled leather cuirass and the multi-layered skirt of leather strips and metal studs that hung from her waist. She shrieked in protest and went down on one knee. Another guard struck her head from her shoulders, and her body slowly toppled to the side. A pale light, barely visible in the bright sun, enveloped Aspen as soon as combat ended. He had, after all, killed 6 men all by himself, and it would be surprising if he didn't gain a few levels. In fact, he could feel a cool flush touch his mind, and knew that his mana pool had increased as well as his intelligence, and likely wisdom as well. Aspen sighed, glancing around to see if anyone had noticed, but he was near the back of the caravan, and everyone's eyes were locked on the events unfolding in front of them in any case. He was safe for now. He reached over and returned his scythe to its makeshift sling, then retrieved Silas from the pack. She burrowed back into her hiding place, casting one last assessing glance toward the front of the caravan. "What did you do?" she squeaked. He grinned and murmured, "I worked smarter, not harder." He would have to thank Rouge for that little saying when next he saw her.